It is Thursday, the 25th of April, and this is episode 161 of Digital Outbox. Right, take two with me actually pressing my record button this time. Welcome to another episode. I am Chris. I'm hosting today. I'm joined by Ian.
The last intro was far better than that.
It was. The ever-patient Ian. We literally have just recorded 10 minutes of a podcast, which is now gone. Never mind.
Well, it's not gone because I've got my bit. So I could quite legitimately release my take on your intro.
Yeah, it was a poor intro anyway. So there we go. I'm in a bit of a rush, and even more so now that we've had to do re-recording because I'm off to my race meet this weekend, and I've got to go and pack, which I'm very excited for.
Honestly, it is like a bunny rabbit getting fed 20 carrots all at once. I've never seen him so excited. It's like, see if he had a tail, it would be like...
I'll also mention I'm still looking after my aunt's dog at the moment, and she's bound to bark at something. So this is all going to go fabulously well tonight. I am absolutely sure of that.
I think from what I understand, you've just shot the neighbour who was mowing his grass. Yeah. So that's all taken care of.
Yeah, that's taken care of in the mafia sense. Right, let's get on with some news then, because Microsoft, they have introduced two-step authentication. I think it was last week they ended up putting that in place, along the same lines as Google, but you can do that across all of your Microsoft accounts.
Yes. Google do it, Apple do it. There's loads of them doing it. And much
even bees do it.
I'm not going to sing again. That's just a little taster of what happened in the previous recording. It's not just, you can set it up against your accounts, but you can also do it on your devices as well. So things like Xboxes, you can set up an app-specific password and attach that to your Xbox, and that's all nice and secured as well. Good step.
And they've released their own authenticator app for their Windows Phone platform, but they've said that there's other apps out there which would do a similar job, and I guess they're referring to the Google Authenticator, which seems to be pretty universal at the moment.
Yep, and doesn't blow screen halfway through use.
Allegedly. A company that needs to have two-step in place, Twitter, it seems, because basically a tweet's ended up costing the world $136 billion.
Last time it was $136 million.
I know, I cocked that up as well.
Oh, I'm
if we recorded everything twice, it'd be much more slick.
Well, you'd think I'd be able to get one whole podcast without a mistake. But yeah, the Associated Press got hacked. So like a lot of people who get hacked at the moment on Twitter, and most of the time it's a bit of fun, you know, or else you get the dodgy celebs and politicians saying, "I got hacked. I wasn't looking at porn, honestly." But Associated Press got hacked, and the tweet that went up was two explosions in the White House and Barack Obama is injured.
Which is pretty damn serious stuff coming from a news.
Absolutely. And people were saying, well, they used his first name, which they wouldn't have done.
It was completely in the kind of, you know, Mr. Assad has money abroad, he wants you to have his account kind of thing.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it has massive implications.
Well, the thing was, I mean, the Dow Jones plummeted nearly 100 points, which doesn't sound that bad until you realise that took $136 billion off the value of companies in America, which is phenomenal.
Yeah. So that shows how serious it can be. And obviously, even if it wasn't meant for that particular reason, you know, to deliberately upset the stock market this time, someone will have now seen that and will be very much aware of the fact that you can make a massive stock market gain.
Absolutely.
By just hacking an account and putting a tweet out.
And we've not seen any evidence to show that people gained out of that and what actually triggered it. Was it just, you know, was it people following that account and reacting? Or was there some automated things in there that they've been following accounts and, you know, somebody hit a panic button, like, you know, like, sell now. There's been nothing else come out about that, but Twitter really do have to do something. You know, I mean, these are, you know, big news organizations, you know, are using Twitter as an a known source of news, and if it's as easily hacked as this. Seemingly the journalists at the Associated Press went through about an hour before, there was a really intelligent scam email get sent to them, and I think a few of them got tricked, and that was how they got into the Twitter account.
But yeah, it just says from Twitter, which initially kind of was a what do we do with this, and it's the throwaway account, it's now, you know, feeding and powering quite a lot of quite high profile things. So yeah,
and Wired,
two-step authentication.
Wired had a follow-up story a couple of days later saying that it's in test at the moment. But that felt very much tell everybody we've got it in test.
Oh my God, let's do something. Jeremy, code it up now, boy. Because they're all English over there. Apple has released more figures. Let's take us through some of these figures because they're just astronomical again, even though we're down a bit.
I apologize to you, Chris, because I did say we won't do any more figures, but I had to cover this one because I've never seen so much press about a company being doomed as Apple right now. So Apple being doomed is basically they had revenue amounting to $43.6 billion in quarter two.
Piffle.
They made $9.5 billion in profit.
God, just a mere trifle.
But of course, it's their first drop in profits, you know, if you look year on year.
But they haven't released anything for the last 7-8 months.
So if you go back
so it's pretty damn good considering they haven't.
Exactly. You go back to quarter two in 2012, and I think they made 11 point something billion. So of course the headlines were saying, you know, Apple's first drop in profits in, you know, 10 years, because that's how long it's been. They've been an amazing you know, upward curve. But the interesting thing was that the revenue actually bet not only Apple's, because Apple's always been quite conservative, but bet all these crazy analysts, you know, make all this money. And it actually outperformed those, and even so, it was almost like a grudging. They did do better than we thought. However,
better than we thought, and they're not doing well is like everyone else's utter booming success.
Absolutely,
though,
and there's a couple of stats came out that were amazing. I mean, the amount of iPads are selling is ridiculous.
Yeah, so for every PC sold in last quarter, Apple sold an iPad.
Yep.
So one company is selling as many as everything else. It's just that, you know, it's bonkers.
And it just makes me think, and it's been said elsewhere, but you almost feel like there is an iPad market rather than a tablet market.
Yeah, I think you're right.
There's it was 22.9 million iPads sold, and that's including the Mini. So obviously they've got a bit of a bump from the Mini as well. But still, it's a phenomenal amount that they're selling.
I think there is another market. You know, there is another It's another tablet market on the back of it, but it's just, you know, it's tickling around the edges of what really is just iPad.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, even the Nexus 7 has seemingly sold, I don't know, about 5 million. And there was some analysis done looking at, if you look at the, you know, the figures that come back from people that are playing on the devices, you know, all the kind of the developers that track stats, and what they reckoned it was maybe only, you know, 600,000 or 700,000 of the Nexus 10s, which is really a low figure considering it's been out, you know, 6-8 months. You know, it's like,
I guess it's, but it does show that the 7s caught attention to people.
Absolutely.
Probably because of the price point as much.
I think it was the price point, and it was a really good 7-inch tablet.
A really good one as well.
Yeah. A couple of other things that are interesting. Tim Cook did say that they probably sold the iMac too early because they announced it last year and then had nothing to sell until January.
I think they were looking for things to announce though, weren't they? Really?
I do think they fell into that trap with that, and I think that was him basically admitting it, that we have done that. And they also said, look, we've got great products through this fall and into next year, which was almost an admission of, you know, don't expect anything between now and September.
Yeah, and that's a long time for Apple. But then when you've got a product range which is, you know, really strong and good anyway, you know, if it ain't broke, don't necessarily need to fix it. Although people do demand that you fix it, even if it just changes.
People demand. I do think it's journalists and tech folk that are demanding it. But at the same time, there is a mindshare thing, you know. So there is something about, you know, the kind of the technologists and the people that are really into, you know, I need to have that gadget first. There is a mind share thing. But at the same time, WWDC was announced. The tickets went on sale tonight. They sold out in 2 minutes.
Wow.
You know, that's 5,000 tickets times $1,600 sold out in 2 minutes. Last year it took 2 hours. And lots of bitter Apple developers on Twitter tonight who didn't get in, and they're saying there must be a better way. But, you know, if you're a developer, it's the place to be, and there's more than 5,000 developers.
Sure there are, but also I bet a lot of them aren't developers, you know.
Oh, I'm sure eBay's got quite a lot of tickets right now.
Let's go on to something. Bad news is a fake ad network set up. It's a clever way for someone's device to infiltrate Google's Play Store, basically, to distribute malware. So it was set up as a fake ad network, which people introduced to their applications as a third-party API, and it had a delayed action on it. So it asked for permissions for what would be relatively legitimate tasks, and then used server and callback to base kind of delayed tactics to then start injecting malware and via those permissions that you'd granted it. Pretty nasty stuff going on.
And very cleverly done, you know, because this wasn't, I guess, one of the risks when I got Android, I don't know if I told you, when I bought the Nexus, I bought it from PC World because the price was the same everywhere. And they tried to sell me antivirus when I was buying it, and I chuckled. I was like, yeah, get a grip.
But then it does make you think, doesn't it?
But yeah, I mean, it's because of all the sideloading, I think, you know, people worry about, you know, there is a fear that, you know, if you can get malware, it will be on Android. But this was all in the Google Play Store, you know, so it was really, really cleverly done. So this was from a company called Lookout that had done this research, who also have an antivirus malware product on Android.
Make it clear that Lookout are the guys that identified this rather than the guys that perpetrated.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they did get in touch with Google, and Google, you know, ripped these apps down, but they believe it's between 2 and 9 million people or downloads, sorry, have taken place on these applications. So I'm guessing, because it didn't, I'm sure they all only said they'd pulled them rather than actually suspend. Because I know they can do that suspend the app thing that Apple can do, can't they? They can actually whip an
remove
app
it
off.
From
But I don't think they said they'd went that far. All they've done is suspended the apps and also suspended the developer, pending further investigation.
I have no doubt they will do the right thing, though, pending that investigation. But yeah, it doesn't help if you're distributing crap out of your phone in the meantime, is it?
And as you're saying, the sneaky bit was that whole, you know, I want this permission, and it was all very innocent, and you say yes, okay, and then it obviously changes what it's accessing later on.
Well, just the way it's accessing that same information and what it's doing with it.
Yes.
Sticking with Google then, I didn't really know this story was in the news. I don't know if we talked about it before, but they've been moaned at by the Competition Commission after lobbying by ironically, a lobby group set up by Microsoft, amongst other people, to say it's unfair that Google kept putting their own search results so high up when people searched on Google. And the judges kind of said, yeah, there is something to be answered for here. And Google kind of said, right, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll label our results a bit clearer, and also we'll put our competitors' results next to our own. How about that? And to which the lobby group said, no, not good enough.
Indeed. So there's Microsoft-backed lobby group called Initiative for a Competitive Marketplace.
How the times have changed.
They have. And it's not just that. When I read that, I was just like, you cheeky buggers.
Yep.
But they're not happy. So it's clear that mere labelling is not any kind of solution. So their concern is that they believe that their content, as in there, I mean, Google's content is being ranked higher deliberately because it's Google-owned rather than just being popular.
And Google, why not?
And Google have said elsewhere that they're not doing that. It's just that, for things like YouTube, it's coming top because it is popular. You know, it is the most, you know, tracked video site.
100%, absolutely. Of course it is. You know, no other video site counts, but I guess that's part of the point of, you know, the Microsofts of this world nowadays saying, you know, it's not fair that YouTube gets to put their results straight up there and our services don't even get a chance. I mean, that's coming from a massive company like Microsoft. So Gould only knows, you know, they're not helping out the little people because they're not going to get search results no matter how hard they try.
No, and I'll be interested because Google seemed to struggle with Europe. You know, so the EU seemed to really kind of, I don't know, just it can be quite damaging to a company if they want to be. You know, it certainly seems to be more than some of the American courts and policymakers. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. That what they're talking about is just trialing it for a month, and then the EU policymakers reviewing after that month to see if it's had a desired effect or it satisfies their concerns.
I kind of hope it does, because I mean, results in Google, they're becoming more and more fine grained. Over the last few months, it's longer than that, isn't it? But you know, if you search for a particular answer, you'll get that answer rather than a list of results to the answer. So
I know one of the cheap arguments has always been, you know, if Google's still open, then tell us what your search algorithms are, and then people can then see clearly how it all works. And it's like, but that's
but they know that they can't do that. No. Not because they don't want to give their search algorithm, well, they don't want to do that anyway. But no one's got the infrastructure to do what they want or do what they do anyway, so it doesn't really matter that much. It's more that they don't want people scamming it, which is fair enough.
Yes, indeed.
But I guess the other side of that coin is they know how to scam their own system.
But as you say, how the world has changed in, 10 years?
Yes. Clegg to the rescue.
Oh, God.
Nick Clegg has pretty much put a nail in the coffin of the web. Well, it's got called the Web Snoopers Charter, but the one that was basically trying to replace looking at people's phone, itemized phone bills. You know, the police had the right to do that before, but now that people aren't using their phones in the same way, they have lost the ability to see who's talking to who. So they tried to do a digital equivalent of looking at everyone's email, who, you know, to's and from's, and looking at who they're Skyping and who they're doing such and such to. But it was almost like it, that because they didn't really understand it and someone just said, well, we need to do this, it went a bit too far and it basically caused a lot of stink, and Clegg has pretty much stopped it getting in the Queen's Speech this year.
Yes, which is good. And I mean, he'd blocked it before, and so Theresa May's had a rewrite.
He blocked it and it went to committee, and the committee said, whoa, this is rubbish legislation, which is pretty much what everyone was saying.
Absolutely. And also, it's been rewritten to try and get some of the more contentious things out of the way. But Clegg again has just turned around and said, not good enough. And David Davis, you know, so he's a former shadow Home Secretary, so he is a Tory. He's actually said, well done, Nick Clegg. It would have trampled all over the privacy of innocent people without improving their security one jot. And what he's also saying is, why have the Home Office spent more than $400 million developing the proposal, which is ridiculous.
How do you spend that much money making a proposal?
Unbelievable.
A rubbish one.
You know, it's incredible that's the figure. And I'm guessing...
I know when you really factor everything in, things do add up, but I want a bit of that money to do that proposal.
$400 million? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
That's ridiculous. Absolutely. So I hate to see it. Well done, Nick Clegg. Indeed, that was that was one of the tweets, wasn't it? I'm trying to see it. Yeah, Privacy Campaign Big Brother Watch tweeted, the Snoopers Charter is dead. Long live Clegg.
There you go. Virgin, they're trying to catch up with Sky, basically. On a technology podcast, that sounds all right. In any other context, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Basically, they've added 21 new channels to their TV anywhere service, so their equivalent of sort of Sky Go, but they've added more to it. Can I be bothered to list the channels? No, I can't. Basically, there's a lot more there if you happen to have it, and you can watch it on demand or sort of live. Still not quite up there with the Sky Go app. You can only stream over Wi-Fi. You can't do it over 3G service at the moment.
I mean, I use Sky Go, and it is pretty excellent. And I failed miserably to cover this last year when it first came out, because it was so far behind, I thought it's not worth it. But obviously, they're almost, their hands been forced. They've got to.
Yeah, of course they have. It's taken them this long to do it. And actually, that's not too long to get such a massive service in place, to be honest.
No, and there's the one caveat that was pointed out was that they've got a Wi-Fi network in the London Underground, so you can watch TV.
You can watch live TV on the way to work. Brilliant. 4G EE LTE.
Love that.
Yeah, I do. They've got 318,000 customers. They reckon they're going to have 1 million by the end of 2013, the end of this year. Not bad going.
I actually think that was a bit.
But don't forget that when it first started, it was in, you know, it's only recently it's spread out outside of the big cities.
That's true. And, and I guess this is the first numbers we've seen, because they always kind of refuse to see numbers before. So they've put the numbers out. I'm kind of a bit dubious whether they'll get to a million, because obviously over the next 6 months, I guess 6 months from now, we should see competition.
Well, that's when the competition comes in. So that's when they're going to start suffering from losing customers elsewhere, I guess.
Yes.
Anyway, but there you go. That's kind of the numbers that we're talking about at the moment. Nothing stellar, obviously, compared to just what, you know, your standard contracts going on in the world.
And I'll be honest, I'm tempted to switch right now. I'm getting a really bad signal with Three in lots of Glasgow areas, and I must get active and start reporting the issues, because I'm not a happy bunny.
Mm.
Bless.
For Samsung, we talked about the preview of the S4, how it looked from all the previews and from what we read and what we, you know, we'd get about that. It was all right phone, but not really a massive step up, and kind of tons of crapware put on top of it. That wasn't really of any use, although it was quite good for like tech demos. And that's pretty much what the real reviews have come out and said.
Yeah. So I think obviously last year that was the Android phone to get, the S3.
But since then, and for good reason, it was a really good phone.
Yep. But since then we've got the Nexus 4, and
yes,
also we've had
a good phone.
Yep. And we've had the HTC One, which is
an incredible phone.
Yeah. You know, design wise, I think.
I'm kind of upset now that wasn't out when I did my phone change, because quite tempted now.
Yeah, but that's what happens.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens. You know, there's probably going to be a Nexus 5 next month. You know,
to be honest, because I'm not on a contract, as in for the phone bit, I could go and get one, but I don't want to.
Yeah,
I'm happy.
Good. I'm glad you've covered that. But as you're saying, it's, you know, great display. You know, great camera. It does have lots of extra software on it that's good. It's seemingly fast and it performs well. But universally, people saying actually it starts to feel quite cheap now. Now that we're seeing really good design, it kind of feels, you know, and people will say, oh, I can take the back off and I can replace the battery. Sod off, it still feels cheap and nasty. Mm. And also, that I couldn't believe this, they've had to add an easy mode. There's just so much on there, all this kind of, you know, wave your hand and do this and that. And when you looked at the people demoing the units to at that launch, you could see there was all these different menus and options, and they were digging their way into it. And it was like, that looks almost too much.
Yeah.
And
I can't remember the name of the Microsoft tablet that was, they showed that it looked amazing when it looked like someone knew what they were doing. But as soon as you figured out, hang on, if I was using this, I wouldn't have a clue what's going on right now.
Yeah. And I think, similar kind of thing. I think for you and me, it would be fine. But, you know, if I look at...
But to start with, it'd be frustrating, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, but I couldn't give that to my mum. You know, my mum couldn't out and buy an S4 and be happy with it. I'd have to switch on this easy mode, which hides a lot of stuff. And it's like, well, what's the point?
And how do you get to easy mode? Well, it's just a quick gesture left and right and an up and down with a quick squiggle, and then you're in.
Is that not
Nintendo?
Is that not the Konami keypad you just did there? Anyway.
Probably, well, actually, you're not far off. A Nintendo.
Oh.
Bad days for Nintendo.
They're doomed.
Another annual loss this year, 366 million, and underwhelming sales of the Wii U. So they sold about 500,000 under where they were even expecting. So
yeah,
I mean, and 500,000 in actual console sales, you know, directly equates to, you know, probably about 5 million in actual game sales. So that's massive, really.
It is. And I mean, they missed their own prediction. They predicted a loss themselves of 220 million. So to actually be well under that, you know, to be another 50% on top is pretty shocking. I don't know anybody that's picked up a Wii U. And maybe it's just a generational thing.
I've not even heard of people saying, you know, I'm enjoying my Wii U or anything.
No. Yep. It's like a,
you're right, it could be generation. But
it feels like a dead console. It just feels like although I will give them this, last week when they did their little 3DS show, and it was a follow-up to a legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. And I was like...
Tempt you in. But when you have to rock out that to try and tempt you in, that's living off old time.
It is. But I wouldn't rule out £150 spend at some point this year. And Shaq was the same. So I know I'm not alone.
You could always just share one.
No.
Mike.
No.
Microsoft are going to announce their Xbox relatively soon. So towards the end of May, 21st of May, they're going to initially do a quick peek behind the curtain about their concepts. Why do we have to have these concept things? I guess because Sony did it, they feel like they have to. And then a little bit later at E3, they are going to let you know about the games and stuff like that. exciting times, really, because everyone does need to see this to compare it against Sony, really, don't they?
They do. And there's been lots of rumours that this is more entertainment focused, you know, so it's not just purely games. So they've talked about the always-on connectivities because it's some sort of interface between you and your you know, cable box or whatever. And I'm like, I don't want that.
They're still umming and ahhing, I think. I mean, I guess they're not now. It's the 21st of May, but they still haven't released details of what they mean by always-on and whether it's just preferred on.
No.
Because I think it is going to upset a lot of people. I think hopefully the SimCity debacle.
Yeah. Lesson learned.
Hopefully, but you never know. I mean... I mean, you're just off-putting a lot of people as well.
Absolutely. And
people,
the way the invite was kind of mentioned, it looks like they will reveal a bit more. They'll actually show you the hardware. You know, Sony haven't shown any hardware yet, which is unusual.
No, every single time you see an article on the Sony PS4 at the moment, you just get a picture of a crappy controller.
Yeah.
Because that's all they've got to show.
The new reimagined controller, which is basically... chop it in half, add a touchpad in the middle. And it'll still have the same crap triggers on it that our fingers.
Well, the trigger looked slightly better in that they released radius the right way rather than the wrong way, but they still chip
from mid May to mid June is looking quite exciting for us technology people, because you've got Google I/O, and then it rolls into obviously the Xbox event, and then the start of June you've got E3, and at the same time WWDC, when we get to see hopefully iOS and OS.
That'd be good. I'm really waiting for at the moment is GTA 4, because the console's not going to be out till Christmas at the earliest anyway. So
GTA 5?
GTA 5 even. 4, I could probably go and get that right now.
Yeah, so Tuesday should be an exciting day for you. They're going to release three new videos from GTA 5, one on each character.
Right. I wish they'd just bloody get the game done. But then I guess that they're rushing that out as well. So they, you know, whatever. The most expensive cup of coffee going today? How much do you think that might be?
I'm not a coffee drinker, so I'd probably pay about £1 and then I'd get hacked off.
Yeah, and then you probably pay a bit like £3 in your Costa coffee for your lattes and stuff. No, would you fancy spending $180,000 on a cup of coffee?
No.
Not even with it if it was with Tim Cook at Apple headquarters?
No, because I'd probably feel vulnerable.
Basically, £180,000 on this charity auction, basically. Tim's said you can have a cup of coffee with me at the Apple campus if you want to bid. And it was expected to go $50,000, and it's already $180,000. Still 19 days left if you want to get in there.
Absolutely, which is crazy.
Someone's really got to come and have a cup of tea.
Yeah. And you've got to think, is it going to be... Can you imagine if it was like somebody from Microsoft? Or somebody from Google?
Hi, Bill.
You know, who could it be? Who could it be? Like Eric Smith turning up and saying, hey, remember me? I was on the board, you know.
Wanted to come back and say hi.
Especially if he's
They're probably the only people that got that kind of money to do it.
But he could be wearing a Google
Glass.
You'd
be much better off just blooming well spending $180,000 on shares.
Absolutely. Especially
You probably get to talk to him then.
Yep. But he could turn up wearing his Google Glass and record it all.
Yeah.
Live stream it.
How good would that be?
That would be
live
class.
Stream on a Google Hangout.
Yep.
Excellent. That is the end of the news. Thank goodness we made it to the end of our podcast. Just about. But you have, in fact, we haven't made it to the end of the podcast because you've got a pick.
Yes.
I haven't got a pick. I overdid the picks last week. So
Picktastic.
This
is a new app for Android, but it's been out for a few months on iOS, and it's iPlayer Radio.
Yes.
So this is the BBC iPlayer Radio app, very similar design to the iOS app. So I don't know if you ever tried it or saw it, but it was a kind of radio dial at the bottom, and you spun it round and you picked a station.
No, I've not seen that. And I never did it on. I've never been on the website version either, because every time I go to iPlayer, it says, "Do you want to go to the radio version?" I say, "No."
So I would definitely recommend downloading the app, because the app's fantastic. Lets you access all the obviously the live radio stations right now, but also gives you access to the last 7 days on demand content and podcast too. So all
yeah, so
from
that,
the one
that
app.
I didn't realize they were doing all the podcasts that way, and that sounds like a really nice way of accessing.
It's fantastic. But also, as you know, if you're listening to Radio One or you know, I don't know, 5, 6, whatever you're listening to, the track will appear as well. That's currently playing. You can favorite it. You can tweet that out as well. And one interesting thing, it links to Radio Player. So Radio Player is the kind of app where BBC and all the commercial stations have kind of contributed to. And I've actually linked to that from iPlayer, so you can say you want to listen to more, go and listen to some of our competitors, which is quite novel.
I think they feel they have to nowadays because they keep getting told off if they don't do things like that.
But it's a very you know, really well written app, all animated lovely and smooth and swish, but the quality, audio quality is excellent.
So it just doesn't feel like an afterthought, no, which is so many apps do on Android.
It really does feel... So yes, the design is similar, but I think that's, you know...
But the underlyings have taken advantage of the hardware. Yeah.
Yes, you know, so it takes much better use of notifications, you know, so you can control it from the notification panel, and it uses shares much more better than in iOS. So it's not just simply ported over, and it doesn't feel left behind. You know, like iPlayer itself always felt a bit left behind on Android compared to iOS. And this is maybe the opposite.
Theoretically, Android apps should be possible to be even more creative and free with the, you know, and be more, you know, future thinking than Apple because of the restrictive nature of Apple. That doesn't really happen at the moment.
No, and Facebook Home shows that. I mean, that's one of the few that I think design wise, you know, it's got the
outside the box.
It's got all the proper. See that kind of buttery feel that the people talk about. That. You know, you almost feel like you're at one with the app. You know, you can touch it and but you move as you're moving something, it's moving with you. And there's quite a lot of apps, I must admit, on Android where even though the actual operating system itself is fine, when you launch the app, there's stuttering.
It's a bit and it's, clunky and ugly, yeah.
And is that Android? Is it developer? I don't know. I don't know enough to know. But I know there's more apps on iOS, but I don't get that feeling.
Yes,
I feel absolutely. It's one.
Yeah, because they have much more of a QC and the quality control on it. Basically, Apple say that's not coming through unless you sort out those stutters. It doesn't matter what your argument is. They always just say it doesn't matter. Just sort it.
Anyway, before you go on your road trip tomorrow, download the iPlayer Radio.
I will do that. That sounds like a good idea.
Cool.
Good stuff. So if you want to find out more about us, you can do at www.digitaloutbox.com. Email us info@digitaloutbox.com and Twitter and Skype. We're on Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as GZUK. I have a blog, academyracer.co.uk. If you want to find out how I do this weekend, tune in and I will post results. Ian, where can
come on. You? I am on. That was for you, by the way. That wasn't a come on about my website, which is iand.net, or my Twitter account, which is Reaper.
Enough of your boring websites, Chris. On to my exciting one.
No, not at all. I am looking forward to some race wins. Not for me, clearly.
Let's just wait and see, shall we? Let's wait and see. Anyway, speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
That's my neighbour's dog.
I have figured it out, but there's no way that I can... I have been listening to that for the last 20 minutes. So.
Yes, so have I. I have to listen to it all the bloody time.
Yeah, I would...
Maybe I should deal with that in a mafia-type way as well.
Well, I would... You get two options. You could deal with it in a kind of Broadchurch way. And if you didn't watch Broadchurch, you have no idea what I'm on about. Or you could just send it to Glasgow, because we are the most violent city in Britain.
You will stab my dog.
Pretty much.
Well, my neighbour's dog, not my dog.
Clearly.